Like to call to order this hearing of the State and Local Government Operations and Oversight Committee for Wednesday, April 21st to 2010. We have one bill before us today, Senate File 3152. It's my bill. Senator Lori will conduct the hearing, and if the committee acts on it favorably, the motion would be to send it to the Judiciary Committee. But because it is a late bill, it would be automatically sent to the Rules Committee, and it would be up to them to confirm the committee report to send it on to the Judiciary Committee. That's what happens with late bills. So we do not make a motion to send it to the Rules Committee. We make a motion. I will make a motion to send it to the Judiciary. Well, I could, but I won't.
Okay.
I don't want it. I don't. Never mind.
Thank you, Senator Rust. Welcome in this capacity.
They tried to talk to him. File 3152.
Mr. Chairman, I'm hoping that the members will respond favorably to my bill, but just to sweeten the experience, Ms. Schaefer-Pellinen has made some absolutely wonderful brownie muffins with homemade peanut butter frosting.
Are you trying to buy our votes?
You're right. We're not supposed to do that, are we? Is there anybody that objects this one time? Okay, good.
Seeing none.
What? Wait, what did I miss?
We're going to give you a
cupcake
because it's my birthday.
Oh, I thought you passed the bill.
Her birthday's not until Saturday.
Saturday.
Her birthday's
birthday?
On Saturday.
My birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
On Saturday.
Nice.
On Saturday.
So
are you going?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll tell you that on Saturday, too.
Okay.
Are you going to bring us cupcakes on Saturday?
Anyway.
I'll buy you a drink at the party.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, I bring you in the committee. Senate File 3152, which is a proposal that would require, rather than leave discretionary, merit selection process for all justices and judges. Currently in Minnesota, there's a merit selection process that offers candidates for the Workers' Comp Court and the District Court, a process whereby a group of citizens that are chosen by the Supreme Court and by the governor make 3 to 5 recommendations to him whenever there is a vacancy that occurs, and then he may act on and choose a nominee for the court from that, an appointee to the courts from that group of 3 or 5, and but he also has discretion to act outside of those recommendations. What this bill does is to do a couple of things. In the first section, it expands the merit selection process to the justices of the Supreme Court and the judges on the Court of Appeals. Secondly, it doesn't change any of the membership, but it does further define who they may be. And I'm looking now, if you will, with me at page 2, lines 12 and on, that the members of the commission must be residents of Minnesota. Sitting judges may not be appointed to serve on the commission. And if you are an attorney at the time of your appointment, you must be licensed and in good standing and practicing before the Minnesota Supreme Court for not less than 5 years. Currently, the appointments are done by the governor. There are seven at-large members, and the governor appoints the chair of the commission, and the chair doesn't have to be an attorney, but may be an attorney, and the governor may appoint attorneys to no more than four of the remaining six positions. So four out of the seven may be, five out of the seven may be attorneys. The justices of the Supreme Court then appoint two at-large members to the commission that serve at four-year terms, and then the governor appoints two district members to the commission in each judicial district who again serve at the pleasure of the governor, and he's limited in how many attorneys he can appoint there, and then similarly the justices of the Supreme Court have the same privilege. Unlike the commission, the Performance Evaluation Commission in Senate File 70, the legislature does not have a role in suggesting members to the Merit Selection Committee or Commission. We're also adding in Section 4 that a provision of how a member may be removed by the appointing authority, and that they can do that anytime for cause or if a member misses three consecutive meetings. That is a provision that also applies to the members of the Performance Evaluation Commission in that in Senate File 70 as well. And then there's a provision for giving notice to a person that meets, that misses meetings, et cetera. And then on page 3, line 11, is the process by which the names then are submitted to the governor. And then the governor, starting at line 321, must appoint a qualified individual to fill the vacancy from the nominees that are suggested, and that if he chooses not to, then the commission has 60 days to submit another group of names, and if the governor and if the commission at any time does not submit names within the time required by the subdivision, the governor then may exercise his discretion in the appointment. So the commission cannot refuse with impunity to forward names to the governor for him to make a selection from. This legislation in the Senate a number of years ago was authored by our current majority leader, Senator Pogamiller, and was suggested by and encouraged by Governor Al Quie, who is here as one of the testifiers on the bill. The reason why we are having what I call an extraordinary hearing, that is after the deadline, is really in relative to Senate File 70. District court judges had indicated that the one thing that was holding back their support for the retention election system and the Performance Evaluation Commission system in Senate File 70 was that it did not have a mandatory merit selection of judges, and I had indicated to them that, as Representative Simon as well, that we were supportive of that, but did not find it appropriate to include in Senate File 70, but would introduce as a indication of our goodwill that we would introduce it and have a hearing on it and move the bill along even this session. You do have a letter in your folder from the Judge Miles. Unfortunately, nobody from the Minnesota District Court Judges Association could be here today in support of the bill. But we do have a letter from them. And I don't have any amendments, but I would like to invite Governor Kui to testify and give his experience, quite frankly, with the merit selection process that he encouraged the legislature to institute and what use he made of it and what recommendations he has for us.
Welcome to the committee, Governor Kui. So, while you come to the table, Senator Marty has a question.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, just a curiosity. If I'm wondering, because what's in the Constitution, what's in the law? Obviously, Governor Kui would have followed this, and I think most of the governors would have, but if a governor chose to challenge this, do you think this would be upheld?
What do you mean?
The right to limit the governor's constitutional authority to appoint.
You're asking me?
Either one.
Since I used to be one.
Governor Kui?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, this prerogative is held very dear by a governor. I recognize that. But if the governor has time to think, you'd realize some things. One is that right now he appoints has appointed every member of the Court of Appeals and all but one of the Supreme Court. And the commission, a selection commission for district court judges, work very well. And if he looks back into the past, he realized that as far as Supreme Court, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court is concerned, it was 1912 was the last time we elected a Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And before that, and it was only two that were elected and seven were appointed. So, you know, this is a part of the system. I did not include this in the executive order because I didn't know how this was really going to work. And I wanted to save this for myself. But as I watched it since then, I noticed that governors, I only know one occasion that was Governor Carlson at the end of his term using that authority that was there, have appointed from the recommendations of the commission. And I paid a little attention to governors after that. And at the first part of their terms, or the time when they served, they pretty much use a similar commission themselves. And so when I look at this, it seems to me the only governors who should think that they could veto something of this nature, it just seems to me, I don't know how this governor would be the ones who want to go back to the federal system. And there might be some people who want to go back to the federal system. But the voters got rid of that long before we became a state, the idea that the federal system was best. So another thing, that if you pass a bill and the governor vetoes it and you can't override it, there will be another governor after November.
There will be.
And there will be another legislative session in January. And you could do this all over again, Ann Ress.
I will. I have to get
If you get reelected.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. But your reputation of carrying this kind of legislation, you shouldn't have any trouble. Who's running against you now?
I never mention my opponent's
name. Never mention his name. Good for you. Yeah. So should I go ahead and...
Yes, Governor Kui, go ahead with your prepared comments.
The first part of it, I just want to say that this works. We've proven it now for this period of time. And those of you who are in the DFL that were here by any chance when Governor Purpos was here, you know, most of his term he did not have a merit selection commission, but your own party... By the time the end of his term in 1990, enacted into law what we have proposed to amend right now, when you look at the governor's prerogative, like you have here, as you look at this, the governor appoints more to the commission than does the Supreme Court. I'll just share this with you. I had the opportunity for me to appoint more than half, and I refused to do that. I'll just tell you my philosophy. If you can't get somebody from who we would say the other side, it's unbalanced. And so if the people I appoint couldn't get somebody convinced who were appointed by the other side, you ought to take another look at it. And what I believe so strongly in it is that as you go up the ladder on the constitutional question, how important it is that the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court looks at the Constitution. You know, district courts are finders of fact, but it's more important on that level. And so I know that in watching the states where there's appointment of judges, which we'll continue to have on the appellate level, the ones that don't have merit selection commission do not appoint as good judges in the appellate system. 33 states have merit selection. 22 of those, it's a part of the Constitution. 4 of them, it comes according to law. And 7 of them, it is executive order by the governors. And so, Senator, I think you ought to go ahead.
Thank you, Governor. Yep. Okay. Mr. Chairman, I have a question for counsel. In the reading about the appointments, in the current law, it says that at 118 and 119, that the members of the commission appointed by the governor serve at the pleasure of the governor, and then on 2-4, it says the same thing: serve at the pleasure of the governor. But then, in the new language, I'm not the author of the language, but anyway, at the new language on 232, it says there that a member of the commission may be removed by the appointing authority at any time for cause. Now, if someone is serving at the pleasure of a governor, the governor doesn't have to have cause to dismiss that member, does he?
Mr. Bodder?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, that's correct. So the way it's written now, I think there's a good catch. The two provisions are in conflict. One way to cure it, at least for the time being, would be to say may be removed by an appointing authority other than the governor, or words to that effect. But the governor's power of removal would exceed what's written on line 2.32.
Mr. Chairman, I think I would like to take a conservative approach with that then and only apply the cause reason for dismissal to other than the governor. In the this language taken from Senate File 70, the members of the Performance Evaluation Commission appointed 8 each by the governor, the Supreme Court, and the legislature all served for a defined term and could only be removed for cause or for missing 3 consecutive meetings. So that language is not there for the Supreme Court, and so it seems to me we'd want to have that only for the Supreme Court so that there would be a way of, at least for cause, of the Supreme Court's appointees being removed. So, Mr. Chairman, I would offer that amendment if Mr. Bodern could read it to us again.
Mr. Chairman and members, on page 2, line 32, delete the second the and insert N, and after authority insert other than the governor.
Everyone understand that oral amendment? Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of that oral amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Rust, any further comments?
No, I believe that the language in Section 3, which provides for the consideration of district court judges that are consideration of appointments to the district court, that those commission members, as members, as district members on the commission, are covered under 3.5 and 3.6, that they don't have to be at commission meetings if there is a district court appointee being considered and it's not in their district. So I think that needs to, I mean, I think that's clear, that that's what's meant by that in terms of missing three consecutive meetings. So, Mr. Chairman, that is the bill. It might be other people that want to comment, and then after that I would have a motion.
First we'll ask if any members have questions.
Chair. Mr. Chair. thank you. Senator Rust, how big is this selection commission again? Because I'm looking that there's two members from each judicial district plus a big group appointed by the governor and some by the Supreme Court. So what is the total?
We have, Senator Betzel probably knows, how many judicial districts are Mr. Bonner?
Ten.
So there would be, there would first of all be seven people always appointed by the governor who are at-large members. And then in the consideration of the Supreme Court appoints two from each judicial district, so that's another 20. And the governor does the same. And let's start out. There are nine at-large members.
So 49.
And then 20 representing each of the judicial districts appointed by the governor and appointed by the Supreme Court. So there could be as many as 49.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you. When they have candidates then come in, I imagine that there is an initial screening for judgeships, and then they interview maybe just the finalists, or how are they handling it? Because would someone have to sit for an interview with 49 potential commissioners then?
Senator
Beg pardon?
Would each candidate who is applying sit for interviews with 49 commissioners?
Well, if you look at Section 3, it says that the individuals that are appointed at the district members as district members, so keep in mind there's nine always, okay, may participate in commission meetings and deliberations only when the commission is considering applicants to fill a vacancy on the district court from which those individuals were appointed. So the way I read the change then is that it would be the gubernatorial appointees, the seven at-large permanent members, and the Supreme Court's two permanent at-large members that would be making recommendations to the governor for the appellate court and the Supreme Court. And then when, let's say, the 10th Judicial District judge is being considered, the two members from that, so that would be, first of all, nine, and then there would be the two members who were on the commission from the 10th Judicial District appointed by the governor, and the two members from the 10th Judicial District that are appointed by the Supreme Court. So that gets us to 11. Would make recommendations for the particular district court. And I don't know whether, if they're considering appointments to the 10th Judicial District and the 8th Judicial District. They may combine that meeting, and it would just be that the nine permanent members and the two members, the four members from the a particular judicial district would be voting on those recommendations, even though other commission members from other judicial districts were in attendance. I mean, that's the way I read how it works.
Senator
and I
Olson.
Don't know, we've not put in law, obviously, the particular process that that they use, and quite frankly, I'm not aware of what it is. I'm assuming they invite, the governor invites people to send in a nomination to the commission, and then he disperses those applications or nominations to the commission, and then they, they're already established, and then they meet and have a process by which they forward nominations to the governor.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. So my math is 7 from the governor, 2 from the Supreme Court, and 2 from the governor from the district, and 2 from the Supreme Court at that district. So 13, is that correct?
13, I think. Yeah. Yeah, I think Senator Rusty, I think you misspoke when you said
11. 9 plus 2 plus 2. Yes. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes. Yes. 13 for only 9 when it's just
only
a Supreme Court and the
yep.
appellate court, but 13 when it would be from any given judicial district, because there would be 4 people from the judicial district from which a recommendation was being forwarded to the governor. Right. Sorry. 13.
And it's really no change for the districts.
We really weren't making a change because
right.
the process, as Governor Kui says, it seems yeah. to be working pretty well. Nobody has raised any huge objections to it, and I think that there's only been a couple of examples of when the governor, at least for the district court judges, has not followed, has not chosen and appointed someone outside of the recommendations. Now, under our current system, of course, the majority, the vast majority vacancies on the courts are filled by appointment rather than a contested election.
Any other questions of members? Seeing none, anyone else in the audience care to speak either in favor or in opposition? Senator Roebling,
thank
before
you, Mr.
we move
Chair.
To that.
I was just going to ask, when it says on line 2.17 that the attorneys would have to have been admitted to practice before the Minnesota Supreme Court for not less than 5 years. Not being an attorney, I don't know if when you get licensed as an attorney in Minnesota, does that make you eligible to practice before the Minnesota Supreme Court, or is there some other criteria?
Yes.
Senator Rust.
When you're licensed.
When you're licensed in Minnesota, that means that you may appear before the Minnesota Supreme Court.
Well, they're the ones who issue the licenses. You can appear before
Senator
any,
Bento.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, you can appear before any. It's virtually every other license from anything you can name is done from the executive branch. Lawyers' licenses are issued by the Supreme Court. So once they issue your license, you're qualified to appear before any state court, including the Supreme Court.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you. And with a change in governors coming up here shortly, because these people serve at the pleasure of the governor, does that mean all of them leave when the governor leaves?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, yes, and that includes the appointees of the Supreme Court as well. If you look at like on line 2.2, their appointment is for 4 years and ends on the same day the governor's term of office ends. At every point that is the case.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
So, Senator Rest, is there, potentially you could have no continuity unless maybe the justices of the Supreme Court, their appointees could continue if the justices wanted that. But But otherwise, when
they could reappoint that
when
person.
Governor Pawlenty leaves, this whole commission gone, and they all have to be reappointed.
Senator Rust,
Mr. Chairman, and Senator Roebling, I think, and I don't mean to second guess the legislature when they put this in place, but they really did want it to be an advisory group to a governor at his pleasure, but they wanted it to be more than just the governor making a decision. And so they certainly wanted him to support the legislation and to require a governor to have as an advisory group people that were not of his choosing, at least to the extent that it's mentioned here, I think would be even more of an encroachment upon the governor's appointing authority. Governor Quay may have a comment on that.
At that point, yeah. Governor Quay.
The Constitution provides that the governor makes the appointments, not the governor that succeeds him. And therefore, when a new governor comes in, or they preceded him, so when a new governor comes in, ought to at least pick his own individuals who would name the commission and is balanced with the more knowledgeable in the court from the Supreme Court doing it. So that's the reason why that. Because you think, why can't you be in staggered terms? And the states who do that run into real difficulty. And I would say that if there was an assurance of who is going to be elected this next November, those on the side of that person who's elected ought to make certain that the governor can have new appointees at that time for the selection. I don't feel as strongly on the commission for performance evaluation. I don't feel that strongly, but I feel strongly. The governor is remembered by his appointments, and they take it really seriously.
Thank you.
So that's why I want to share that with
Thank
you.
Thank you. Any other questions of members?
Mr. Chair and Senator Rust, I have one kind of a little bit off the main subject, but I clarified with Mr. Bonin that there's another section of statute that says that if you're a member of the selection committee, you cannot be appointed yourself. But if you're serving at the pleasure of the governor, could a commission member resign and then be appointed?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sieben, I would certainly think so. I don't know if there's a cooling off period.
There is. Madam Chair, Mr. Bonner just pointed out that you
Senator
cannot fill, you cannot be a appointee for a year following the end of
right.
their membership on the commission.
Right.
So,
okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Sieben.
Any other questions of members? Senator Roebling.
Now, I know we have this Supreme Court Chief Justice issue coming up, but this is for all of the justices of the Supreme Court, including the Chief Justice, right?
Senator Roebling, that is correct. But keeping in mind too that the commission can't hold the governor hostage forever. They can't say, well. We want to keep something open. If they don't make a recommendation within 60 days, the governor may choose whoever he wishes. And so there is an accountability placed on the commission in this instance.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Governor Quigley.
And it'd be a pretty lousy governor if he's got seven appointees at large and two by the Supreme Court that
couldn't give him a recommendation.
Pick somebody he didn't want.
Yeah. Or that weren't acceptable to him.
He's got real troubles in his regime if that's the case.
And again, I think that I've heard that there's only been maybe one instance or two at the most where the 3 to 5 candidates that were recommended were ones that the governor, a governor, I don't even know which one it was, did not choose from. So it's very rare. And for, I think, the exact reason that the governor mentioned that
of the permanent at-large members, seven out of the nine are the governor's appointees. And so I think they would know what his, you know, what his judicial philosophy might be, if there is such a thing for an executive to have, the kind of people that he would want names brought brought to him. And, you know, not every appointee is of the, are necessarily of the governor's political party. There are some people who are in the judiciary that have not declared a political party preference. So that's not always a foregone conclusion. It happens most of the time, but it's not a foregone conclusion.
Any other members' questions? Seeing none, there was somebody from the audience. Come on up to the microphone and state your name for the record.
Yes, my name is Tom Pritchard, President of Minnesota Family Council. I guess I just want to maybe raise some concerns. Yeah, the way I look at this issue is in regards to judicial judges and so forth is concern over accountability. I think that's the major concern we have. I think it's you're kind of weighing independence and accountability, but I'm concerned that this maybe moves the debate or the balance of power away from accountability to the people, and that's a major concern because basically the governor obviously can't just unilaterally appoint somebody, but he's in some respects the power to appoint is given to this commission. And they, in turn, give the governor some opportunities to select, but he has to pick from who they give him. And our concern is that you're giving more power to this independent the selection committee. And I don't think that's a good direction. And I think this is a significant move away from the current system because district judges don't have that precedent-setting power. And I think now you're giving more power to frankly, the legal establishment, judges, the judicial community to decide what sort of judges we have. And in some respects, it maybe will reduce independence, picking candidates who may not reflect the judicial community's thinking. And I just think that I'm not sure that's a good direction to go, that less accountability to the people. The governor obviously has the direct accountability to the people. And so I guess I would just raise some concerns about this and that it will give more power to the judiciary, the legal community. And I don't say that because I have an animus towards lawyers. I am a lawyer, a licensed attorney, but I just don't think that's a good direction to go. And I think that's the major problem we see with the dangers to the judiciary is not independence or qualified candidates, but it's a lack of accountability. So those are your 2 cents.
Thank you, Mr. Pritchard. One more speaker.
Mr. Chairman, Rath. I just respond to that this is an advisory group to the governor, for the most part chosen by the governor. And so there is no pretense that the Merit Selection Commission is, quote, independent. It is heavily influenced by, obviously, by the governor. I think that to the governor's credit, and I don't mean just this governor, but others, the appointments that have been made over time, even under our current contested election system, have generally been upheld. And I think, although most of us may be don't turn the ballot over and vote for judges, or at least a number of my constituents don't. But I think that when that accountability measure is already there, and the Judicial Selection Commission is not is advisory to the governor and acts to make recommendations to him. So I don't think the independence issue or the accountability issue is one that really is, I don't think those are salient points, quite frankly, for the merit selection group. For the Performance Evaluation Commission, it's extremely important, obviously. Mr. Nathan.
Mr. Nathan.
Thank you, Senator Rust, Senator Lowry, members of the committee. I would like to put in a plug for the people. And by that I mean this. Most all of you agree that the election of judges today is a fiction. Almost all judges are appointed, and that occurs by reason of the circumstances that judges retire when they reach their 70th birthday, which gives the governor an opportunity to appoint judges. And we all know that the ballot that you referred to, Senator Rest, typically has a long list of unopposed judges, incumbent judges, who are the only choice that voters have, with the consequence that voters really don't have any choice. They have nothing to choose from. Now, in contrast to that, I would like to direct the members' attention.
Could you state your name for the record, please?
It's Dale Nathan.
Thank
you. I'm sorry. This last election in Ramsey County, November 2008, we had a contested election. We had former Representative Ornstein as one of the final candidates and now Judge Bohr as a candidate. And what happened is the people really did meet the candidates and evaluated them and chose a very fine judge, and that's Judge Bohr. We've had other examples. Judge Susan Miles is an elected judge. There are other judges who have been elected by the people, and they're fine judges. Judge Thomas Armstrong, Judge Carol Hooten, Judge Kathleen Guerin in Ramsey County, Judge Margaret Marinan. There are a number of excellent judges chosen by the people when they've had the opportunity to meet the judges, to hear them, and to evaluate them. And so the perspective I would like to give to you is that the current system works when it is given a chance to work. And while I am sure that the commission that Senator Rest's bill proposes is an attempt to make sure that candidates are qualified. Nonetheless, you have a group of 49 people who are charged with the responsibility of choosing over 296 judges. And when you add in the appellate judges, that's another 50 or so judges. Now, how much time can a selection committee give to studying the qualifications of all those people? And so I submit to you that it is best to leave the election of judges to the people, as is done in 39 states. And I believe the people will elect well-qualified judges. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nathan. Senator Butzold.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Nathan, a number of the seats that you cited, Armstrong ran against a judge who'd been censored, but Judge Miles, Judge Chang, ran in open seats because the judge allowed the term to expire, which meant the governor could not appoint. And so the judges made the decision to basically, you know, have the elections take place. There isn't anything right now that requires a judge to serve out a term. You know, I mean, we do have a mandatory retirement age at age 70, but even if that were repealed, the same thing would happen that happened previously. I mean, a judge would decide, I'm going to retire at a certain time, midterm, the judge would leave, and then what do you do? You know, the law has been provided that if there's a vacancy, the governor makes the appointment. So how do you force elections when the judges can basically determine when they leave?
Well, we would have to change at least one statute. The statute says that a judge will retire the month that he or she turns 70 years old. That's what the statute says. And that needs to be changed. When you force a judge to resign at the on the last day of the month that he or she reaches 70, you force the appointment of a new judge. If you were to change that to say that a judge must retire at the end of the term following the month of his 70th birthday, then you would automatically provide that most judges, probably all, will retire at the end of their term, which automatically opens up the seat for a contested election. That's a problem that has to be dealt with if indeed you want to get away from the present system, which, as a consequence of the way it's set up, requires judges to retire in the middle of their term rather than at the end. I hope that answers your question.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you can't, Mr. Nathan, I think the point is that you can't require them to wait if they want to retire earlier for any reason. They certainly have the privilege of doing that. You can't force them to continue to serve until the end of the year, the end of the term in which they reach 70. So,
well, most
I mean, you might like that, well, but they, you can't force that.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Senator Betzel,
before the mandatory retirement age was put into law, judges didn't serve out their terms. Judges decided when they would retire. I mean, age 70 is something that's in there now, but before that became law, the judges would decide, I'm going to retire. Most judges did not serve out their term. They resigned at some point during their term, and the governor filled it. Rarely did a judge serve out the term, and there was a contested election. So the age 70 has nothing to do with it.
Senator Pappas.
I'm not necessarily advocating this, but I think the only way to get around that is you would say that the governor could appoint someone that would be the judge temporarily until the next election, and that person would not be eligible to run.
That's exactly correct.
That's the
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, I think that sounds like, you know, ideal if you want to keep contested elections, but I just wonder how many judges or potential judges would agree to that kind of temporary appointment when there's, you know, if you haven't been on the bench, going on the bench, there's a learning curve to, et cetera. I don't think justice would be served by that kind of temporizing.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, I assume it would probably be done by a retired judge. Often that happens in a school board or city council race where there'll be a temporary appointment to serve out the term and then there's an open election. But I'm supporting your bill. So.
I understand. Good discussion.
Any other questions, comments from members?
Mr. Chairman, then I would move that Senate File 3152 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Judiciary.
By way of rules.
We know that.
By way of the Rules Committee.
We know that.
Well,
yes.
Automatically goes to rules.
And it will follow the process described by Senator Rest earlier in the committee. Senator Rest moves Senate File 3152 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Judiciary. On that motion, any further comments? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Thank
members.
You, Senator Rust.
And
there
please
being no further
help yourself
business
to
for this committee.
Yeah, please help
adjourned.
Yourself to the. You may adjourn to our brownie with chocolate chips, homemade peanut butter frosting, cupcakes.
One is enough.
Was one was is aren't
rich.
They delicious?